what we're dealing with usually in therapy or any sort of change or healing is how to create something, how to cross a threshold, if you will, use sort of Joseph Campbell's hero's journey language, and how to create a future that has never been experienced before, perhaps never even imagined before.
Yeah, that's amazing, because, you know, Moshe, I don't remember the exact words that he used, but he would say that. He's like, you know, I want someone to have an opportunity to experience himself in a way they've never thought of before, they've never seen possible before, and in a way that you couldn't, I wish I could remember exactly what he says, but what you couldn't have predicted.
But I know Feldenkrais, that was really one of his more beautiful aspects of his work, was his intense interest in that and his belief that anybody could do that.
Mm-hmm.
He shared that with Erickson.
Yeah, and you said that he shared that with Erickson. We should probably talk about that, because they met at one point, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah? So, well, how did that all come about? And because I've heard rumors of it, but no firsthand reporting.
This was, I don't know, maybe 1976. I was still an undergraduate, and I used to teach. My teaching partner at that time was Paul Carter,
mm-hmm.
and we were doing a workshop up in Berkeley, and Feldenkrais's manager, Coleman, I remember Coleman's last name, and he said, I'm bringing this guy Moshe Feldenkrais to the States. He was just doing his first training in, I think it was San Francisco. I think like Mark Reese and Dennis Leary, I believe we're in that.
Yes.
And he said, Feldenkrais is really interested in Erickson. Is it possible to meet him? And we said, well, we're going out next month. Maybe we can arrange it so that Feldenkrais can come when we're there. We'd love to be there. So I talked to Erickson, and he said, yes. And Feldenkrais came, I think it was 2 days. And the short of it was the first day was an utter disaster, and the second day was incredibly amazing and interesting.
So what was happening? Why do you say disaster? They didn't hit it off at first?
They didn't hit it off. And, you know, I was, you know, a complete devotee of Erickson, so I saw it through that lens. But, you know, over the years, I've shifted my understanding of what happened. There's an old psychiatric adage, you never put two Napoleons in the same cell. And I think both Feldenkrais and Erickson were real sort of alpha males who, you know, were used to holding court and being, you know, the great genius healer wizard. And so they clashed, and they were on Erickson's turf. You know, as amazing as Feldenkrais was with his hands, he wasn't as skilled with his mouth.
Yes.
And
we're aware of that.
Yeah. So he came in, and Erickson said to him, why are you here? He came in, it was about an hour into a session where Paul Carter and his then wife and me were there, and Mrs. Erickson brought him in, and Erickson said, you know, why are you here? And Feldenkrais, I think, was a little flustered, and he said, I'm here to save you. And Erickson looked at him sort of with incredulity and said, what makes you so sure I want to be saved? And then he said, sit in the patient's chair, which he had his special little chair. Feldenkrais was, I think, a little bit unnerved by it, and he responded by beginning to say, I can really help you. And Erickson said, well, why should I trust you? I've got to basically get up and do 4 or 5 hours of pain control, you know, every day. Why should I let a stranger put their hands on me? And I think Feldenkrais took it as an affront and began to talk about all the people he had healed. And, you know, if it wasn't for him, that Israel would have lost the Six-Day War because he worked with Moshe Dayan personally and blah, 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 blah. And Erickson was very weak that day. You know, his health was in and out in his last decade. And he tried to then, I think, be a little bit nice, but Feldenkrais was on a roll. Finally, Erickson had a purple fly swatter. You may know that he was colorblind. You could only see the color purple. And he picked up the fly swatter and just held it while he looked steadily at Feldenkrais, who was droning on about this and that. And finally, Feldenkrais paused. And Erickson said, "I always like to carry a purple fly swatter in the office in the summertime." And Feldenkrais said, "Oh, yeah, but what you don't realize, by about..." And he paused again. Erickson said, "Because you never know when there's going to be a pest in the office."
And oh, wow.
It was like Feldenkrais got hit with a psychic shotgun. You could just see him sort of, you know, getting pounded. And he recovered. And he kind of continued as if nothing had happened. And I think Erickson was pretty impressed. He took my best shot. And he ended the session shortly thereafter, and he asked me to wheel him into his house, which was next door to his office. And I came back out, and Feldenkrais was saying, "Did I say something wrong?" I think he was quite oblivious to what was going on.
Uh-huh.
And interestingly, I had just started Taekwondo, and I was training in a terribly bad way, and I had developed water on both knees. My knees were really swollen, you know, and the karate teacher had been saying no pain, no gain. So I thought, man, I must be gaining a lot. And Feldenkrais is saying, "I just wanted to help the guy, and I just wanted to show him what I could do." And I said, "What would you do with my knees?" And he stepped back, and it was really a remarkable thing, because he shifted into the most amazing state, sort of like watching Erickson shift into his healer state. You know, it's like a totally different person.
Hmm.
And he said something very softly, like, "It's not your knees, it's in your chest." And he came over and made these adjustments. In about 5 minutes, he brought a chair over. He said, "Let your knee lift onto this chair." I did so somewhat awkwardly. He said, no. And did a few more adjustments. He said, "I'll try again." And my leg just floated up. It was amazing. And he said, "Just rest it for another week or so." Sure enough, I mean, the knees healed quickly, and I was back training a little bit differently this time.
Interesting.
So he said, "Listen, I really want to connect with this guy. What should I do?" And we said, "Well, our recommendation is, you're on his turf, be quiet." And next day, Feldenkrais was a totally different person. And these two had the most amazing discussion for about 2 hours about their own learnings and understanding about kind of basically sort of the mind-body field and sort of the systemic nature of the mind-body system and how you could enter at any point and it would begin to, you know, perturb other points in the field. And it was just an amazing, amazing discussion. And then at the end, Feldenkrais said, I really would like to just lay my hands on you for 5 minutes. I'll be incredibly gentle. I think it really could help." Erickson said, "Okay." Feldenkrais walked behind Erickson, placed his hands on Erickson's neck, and Erickson, who was this old guy, and he was in a lot of pain, he looked like he became this young boy. You know, all of his pain and his tension just sort of moved out within 2 minutes, and this sort of sweet, innocent young boy was there, and you could see that Feldenkrais sensed that, because he just stepped back very gently, I think realizing that the shift had been made. And he went back over and sat down and said to Erickson, "How was that?" Now Erickson, who was one of the most sensitive guys, you know, that I've ever met, said somewhat shockingly, "I didn't feel a thing." And it was one of those statements that sort of surprised me for many years. And I think in the end, I mean, my conclusion was it was hard for him to let go. It was hard for him to surrender to another person. And I think that perhaps he and Feldenkrais shared that. So it's too bad that they weren't able to meet again. I don't think they met again.
No, I don't think so.
Because I think it really could have been very interesting for the both of them.
And why didn't they meet again? Did Erickson die shortly after that? Or?
Well, I think there was a few appointments that were made, and then Erickson got ill. You know, when I knew him, which was 1974 to 1980, his health was in and out. So it's partly why he wasn't really seeing any patients. So you made an appointment with him as a student with the understanding that it was on if his health was okay. I think that's the case. I'm not absolutely sure, so I shouldn't be quoted as an authority. And then, I mean, in terms of their mutual schedules, the times where they could meet didn't happen, and then Erickson died. He died in 1980, so I'm not sure when that meeting, I thought it was 77. It might have been, I'm pretty sure it was, because it was in his office, and it was about 78 that the horde started coming, and Erickson moved to his waiting room because there was a lot more students at that point.
Well, great. I've heard bits and pieces of that story, but never the entire thing.